you like Robert to do research for the seminary. This is really exciting thing. Like, call to ministry and bringing God's kingdom to people. And he's here for helping us learn about our connection with God. And so I'm really glad that she's joined today for a team sermon. And we're continuing then for that sermon in our Embrace a Little Crazy sermon series. And that's about opening ourselves up, being shaped by God, even by passages and doctrines in our faith that seem a little bit out there and that we often will try to rationalize or maybe kind of not think about for a little bit in one way or another. And so, our scriptures today are both what are termed by theologians as eschatological scriptures. And it may sound like a little bit of one that we try to wrap our brains around a little bit, and it's not always easy. Eschatological is basically just a fancy word for having to do with what ultimately happens to us in reality at the end. So that can be when individuals die or at the culmination of history. These are some of the most challenging parts of Scripture because they are inherently mysterious. They use a lot of symbolic language, not just literal language. We can't really know exactly what it is that they do describe. And they often say that we won't figure it out no matter how hard we try. But there are verses that specifically say, you will not know the day or the hour. You do not understand the things of God in this way. But there are also passages that then people often get especially fascinated about and want to figure out. Feel definitive and certain about in a certain way. And so knowing that our faith holds the doctrine that God will bring history to a close someday, that it will in some way involve all of reality being resurrected, which basically means that it's physically recreated with a more spiritual essence, similarly to how Jesus was raised from the dead at Easter. So we have that doctrine, but we don't know exactly how it's supposed to work out. And that will lead to a lot of possibility for contemplation for all of us. And I know I've had seasons where all sorts of thoughts get stuck in my head about this doctrine. And I imagine that probably all of us get weird thoughts stuck in our head sometimes, and I guess, and maybe even hope, that this is going to be relatable, that you have all had time for you to join me in having thoughts about heaven and what happens when we die and trying to figure that out. One of the main questions that I have come up with for this off and on is what is that resurrection body really like? There seems to be a sense that it will capture an essence of us, but in a better way. And so it's made me wonder, which is the most me of my body? Is it like me right now? Is it me when I was younger? Is it going to be me when I was older? I'm still on my way to that most me. Right? It's something that I haven't experienced yet. And so then I wonder, depending on which one it might be, how do I feel about if I'm in the most me moment in my life? Should I take things more seriously if this is the most me? What if I'm already past that me? Should I feel weird and like now everything just kind of half as good because that was the most me before? I'm let down? Or, you know, maybe if I'm looking ahead, do I need to be ready to anticipate which body is the most me and how I'm operating in that? Maybe it's just me that thinks about all these needs. But hopefully you understand where I'm getting at least. When I was growing up, I did have a moment though where it wasn't just something swirling around in my own brain. That these thoughts would have implications not just for me, but for other people as well. And I wondered how they would feel having those same sorts of questions. I realized this especially with a neighbor of mine who was deaf. There's stories in the Bible about deaf people being healed, and so maybe when he was resurrected, he'd be able to hear. But he was happy with who he was. He didn't want to be healed or get hearing aids. He felt that being deaf was a core part of his essence. And he found meaning interacting with the world just the way he was. And that really made me think about what is resurrection, really? How should I value my body and my sense of self, and for other people to value their body and their sense of self? And I know Zoe has some things to share with us about that as well.
Yeah. I've often been in the past of getting kind of off, especially during my personal journey of learning how to deal with my disability and who I am because of that disability. It's really funny when you start to cycle through memories and you begin to kind of piece together how everything is connected in ways that you never even really realized. It was due to my own experience with the deaf community that really prompted my journey of identifying with my disability. And ultimately, with that same question, which me is the most me? When I was in college, I decided to take ASL as my, to meet my English requirement. And it was one of the best choices that I've ever made. Not just because it was a fun class and I enjoyed learning the language, but also because that single semester that I was able to take that class completely changed how I saw myself. It ultimately set me down the path that I am currently on. And it did this all because I learned one simple sign, and it was a random day. That sign is the sign for the deaf community. My teacher explained that the sign for the deaf community is always and intentionally capitalized. And this is entirely because the deaf community consciously decided to do so. They did this because they wanted the sign that represented them as a community to reflect that they are not ashamed or embarrassed about their disability. They're deaf and they're proud of who they are. At this point, I had been diagnosed and living with my disability for about 7 years, and every single one of those days, I had been embarrassed, even kind of ashamed. Every single one of those days, I had hid who I was. From the time of my diagnosis to that class, I wasn't me. When it dawned on me after learning this sign that I didn't have to feel that way, that there were other people with disabilities who were out there living their best lives and being proud of the person who they are, I felt like a bag of bricks hit me. It was the first moment that I began to understand that I was enough not despite my disability, but even because of it. And that completely changed the entire game for me.
Thank you for sharing that, Zoe. That's a really wonderful picture of friendliness. It's a really wonderful picture of God moving to help you feel loved and fully yourself. Many of us probably have our own examples when God has done that for us or loved ones for something else that we're experiencing. Sometimes it's about feeling like we can still be ourselves and loved by God as our bodies are impacted by age. Sometimes those of us that might struggle with having an ideal weight and going through that have had to have a time of feeling God's love and acceptance of who we are. It could also be experiences of neurodiversity, whether you have a learning disability, you're on the autism spectrum, anything like that. God honoring who we are, even if we are a little bit different than many people, and being with us when we experience real struggle, and lifting up our worth when we sometimes feel less than. It's a powerful way that we experience God's love and Creator Spirit. But we do also have to acknowledge that in our faith, there are stories of healings and miracles, and we have that doctrine of resurrection that our scriptures lift up today. And that resurrection will make everything whole and take away meaningless suffering. And then those ideas can inevitably lead to more questions and complicated feelings about ourselves, our bodies, and what wholeness that we should really believe God wants to give us. As we start to think about this and wrestle with our own feelings that we've had over time, we'll ask God to keep teaching us. I want us to pause for just a second to remember some things about God's love being expressed through miracles and healings. You remember a few weeks ago, we did a sermon together learning from Jesus feeding of the 5,000 and Elisha helping a widow who would have been destitute by miraculously making it that she had enough oil that she could have for herself and also sell some to have enough money to survive. In that sermon, it was really important that we notice that most of all, the miracles were not just having a showy way of solving one problem in one moment for one person. But there's a fullness to miracles, where a moment or situation is used in a powerful way to have an impact on a whole community and be able to have ripple effects going forward if people will keep living the value of those miracles out in their lives. So miracles are about bringing a whole community together. They keep people's focus on the greater good, and they give encouragement to keep bringing God's values and God's power to more and more similar situations in the future and in the rest of their lives. And this is important because we can actually sometimes get distracted by thinking that all we're supposed to do with miracles is decide whether we agree with them or we disagree with them, or they're a little bit hard to accept. And so then the most dramatic and impossible understanding of what the miracle is becomes the only thing we think about, and not whether we can picture ourselves experiencing it, whether we can learn something from it, even if we never have a really dramatic experience. And so I believe that we have to hold on to the fact that the point of miracles is not just about agreeing or disagreeing. It's about learning from the fullness of the miracle and figuring out how to make it matter in our lives. Saying to ourselves, if this is the type of thing that can happen, if this is how God wants to operate with us, how can I learn and make choices to make the world a more miraculous and loving place? And I believe that we can make miracles matter in our lives in positive ways. But the tricky thing is that if we understand them incorrectly or get distracted by just focusing on agreeing, we can also make miracles matter in our lives in a negative way, for us and for others. We make the meaning of healings and miracles and the doctrine of resurrection actually hurtful or dehumanizing to people rather than life-giving. And that's really a more serious problem even than disagreeing with something dramatic in a miracle. And Zoe has some ways of helping us understand how that can be.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think one of the reasons why my ASL class revelation had such a significant impact on me was because it introduced me to the idea that I did not need to be healed or be anything other than what I already was in order to be enough for God, for others, even for myself. This entire wrestling with my disability and healing is what I spent my entire seminary career studying. Every single passage read, every translation deciphered, every major paper produced, all of it centered on this idea. There is what seems to be a never-ending lineup of miraculous healing stories in the Bible. I find, as I'm sure many of us do, so much hope and comfort in these passages. And this was especially true for me for several years after my diagnosis, because all I wanted was to be rid of my diagnosis and to be healed. But the more I studied this topic and pondered on this question of which me is the best me, the more I began to wonder about the way we as a Christian community project onto others what we believe God views as best in humanity. With miraculous healings, for example, it is possible that despite our hope and desire for a wholeness in God that we don't even understand yet, the message that is really received by some is that if you are disabled in some way, you are not enough in God's eyes, and so that disability is removed. This kind of interpretation is at the root of so much hurt that is felt by the disability community, even though it may not at all be what we really believe. And I think that this is just one example of why simply agreeing or disagreeing with miracles or doctrine misses the point of being Christian. If we could instead not necessarily think solely about what biblical feelings did for the individual and whether or not we agreed with what that accomplished, instead if we thought about what they accomplished for the entire community, I think we would be able to connect with people in our own community in far more impactful ways. In stories of healing, there is much more to be seen than just someone's health improving. We see in these stories family reunited, friends united in compassion, and even community moved to work for a common good together. We are shown time and time again throughout the Bible in stories like these things, and even in the resurrection of Christ, that God values us and our bodies exactly as they are right now. God does this by taking on a human body in the first place. And when Christ reappears whole in the resurrection, with a body still physically broken from the crucifixion, we can understand this to be God's declaration that as humans, we are broken, and that is enough. Our bodies are varied in infinite ways, each one of them imperfect in our own eyes, but worthy in God. As Christians, we all share in the hope for healing that will come in the resurrection. But what that healing is varies among all of us. And that is a good and beautiful thing. I think the piece of healing we are all called to partake in now in understanding that the best you is the you that accepts all of the flaws and the brokenness and knows that you are enough. Not despite those things, but because of them.
Yeah, thank you so much, Zoe. I do think that it's really important for us to anchor that sense in commonality. Again, one of the things that our differences in our bodies and in our life experiences can do is it makes us feel like we're all kind of separate classes or types of people. And then trying to figure out how to understand each other can feel that much more difficult. Again, like we talked about, our baptism unites us together. The Spirit of God unites us together. And so our resurrection and miracle unite us together in the same way. And like Zoe said, we are all going to have things in our life now and at the resurrection that are going to be affirmed by God and that will give us hope and encouragement and maybe even ways that surprise us that other people have made us feel ashamed of or separate from others because of. We're also all going to have things that God is going to transform and heal and resurrect that have been struggles, that have been painful, and that will give us great hope. But God's in control of that, and we're not. And that's true for ourselves and for other people. And so we trust God to bind us together in whatever will be affirmed for each of us, whatever will be healed and transformed for each of us. And we let people in their connection with God tell us what they feel God is doing for them in that. And we support them in that, rather than projecting, I know that God will accept you when X, Y, and Z happens. And so that's the thing I'm going to focus on for you. We can join together in knowing that God accepts us all together and support each other in affirming each other where we can take away shame and encouraging each other where we can continue to be improved in healing and transformation. And here's some of the things that I think our verses today in the doctrine of resurrection really help drive that home for us. And can help us see we need to find with God a good sense of self for ourselves, but also then for how we understand interacting with others, especially if their experience and embodiment is different than us, so that we can make, through God's help, a community for all of us. So our Bible passages today both give us amazing pictures of how God moves for each of us individually and all of us together as God's family, in miraculous ways of all types in the hope of resurrection. In the Isaiah passage, we see God lifting up people, foreigners and eunuchs, whose very bodies were considered not good enough by their society. You were not Jewish, you were not clean, did not have full participation in the community of God. You were a eunuch, you were not clean, did not have full participation in the community of God. But God pushes against that and assures us of their worth, even in those areas that others might find less worth in, and not be able to see the full value in on the face of it. And God, it also shows God bringing about a fuller and more life-giving community, because we're all included together and better see and honor each other's value. And the Corinthians passage reminds us of all the types of bodies that God makes. As God is doing that as a talented and loving creator, and assures us that the beautiful variety will be retained as we and all others will also experience renewal and fullness of life that maximizes and magnifies the most important parts of who we are and who we can be in God. These are great hopes and will do much to bring resurrection where there is suffering, division, minimization, and death. And God will help us have taste of that even now. We should find hope and encouragement in both of those ideas. We can remember that our best connection with God and experiences with each other will not come from disagreeing or disagreeing with these ideas, but in making them matter. If this is what God is lifting up, how can we live it out? We make this matter by then remembering we all, whatever our experiences, whatever our bodies, we'll have things about ourselves that God affirms, even though we might not expect it. We all have things that God will transform. Again, even that might surprise us. Because that is true for each of us, it is true for others as well. And so we will treat each other like that is true. And in so doing, we will experience God's love the same way that God expresses it to each of us and who we are. And lastly, we can all do what we can to participate in the fullness of God and God's miracles, knowing that that can and will include the healing of individuals, but also the healing of all of us together, to be better at having room for the full dignity of all people and the full participation of all people in who we are. There's a trend of teen makeover movies when I was growing up. I don't know if some of you remember those as well. But basically the point of the whole movie was there would be somebody that was an outsider, and the neat, hopeful thing was that they would turn from being the nerd or the dork or the weird one into beautiful and popular like everyone else would actually accept them for by the end of the movie. And that change was seen as an amazing accomplishment. And later there were some movies that realized that maybe that wasn't the best message for people, and so other characters would acknowledge, yes, I should still like the outcast nerdiness in some way. Just luckily, they're still going to keep all the designer clothes and the fancy makeup and still clearly be beautiful, but I am also glad that you won the science fair. And so, in these movies, yes, a person experienced individual change, and that helped them experience more fullness of life in the world of the film. But man, what a second-rate life that would be, if that was really what we experienced. For me, I want to participate in a world where all realize, hey, maybe saying that only one type of kid in this school is good enough is a junky way to go through life. Maybe we don't need to change all the weird ones to look like the cool ones, and it'd be better to just all let go of valuing and devaluing people like that. And instead, make everyone feel like they don't have to fit themselves in to some particular definition in order to be valuable. Maybe we can make a whole community where we all know how to appreciate and be together in all of the ways that God made us. Then everyone will be happier and better and more included for it. And all of the things that we do will be improved because no experience or perspective is being left out even. And to me, that's what Zoe is helping us see today, and that's the amazing promise of the resurrection, when it really matters in our lives, even if that feels a little bit crazy. That's why I invite us to continue to try to do together as a community. Zoe, do you have any last things to make sure that we hold on to with this as a concluding thought?
When Tom and I got together to talk through this sermon, I kept bringing up a pop culture reference to the Netflix show Midnight Mass. And there are several characters in this show that show this very well, but I could not for the life of me figure out how to get it into my piece of the sermon. So, my last bit is just that if you want to see like a visual representation and you're into Halloween pop culture, definitely go watch Midnight Mass, because it's a really good example.
Yeah. And those stories that help us kind of connect that more, whether it's teen makeover movies or stories where there's kind of healings, but then what the meaning of those are and how people decide God's really moving for them, and maybe raising some big questions are great to help us connect with things, especially if these ideas are new, if they're hard for us to wrestle with a little bit. But we know that God will walk with us through any of those things and keep giving us good examples, not only whether it's in pop culture, but in the people around us, like Zoe, like Eve and Will and John, and like all of you, walking together with each other, even when we have different experiences, even when we have struggles, that we find ways that God affirms each of us and support the ways that God is transforming all of us. As we continue in that spirit, we think about how we offer all of ourselves, and we'll pray for our offering.